talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Today is February 27th. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
And this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Kate Marquis has joined us as our special guest today.
Oh.
Kate is the doyen special. Of local movie critics. She reviews movies over at the Jewish Light, as well as WeAreMovieGeeks.com, where she just reviewed United Kingdom the other day. Mm-hmm. Well, how many stars did you give that one, Kate?
I gave it 3.5. I was kind of going back and forth between 4 and 3.5. It's a terrific story, but not a terrific
All right, well, we'll let you give it a little more detailed review of that here in a few minutes.
I'm curious about that.
Let's see. Oh, it's Oscar hangover morning. We were all at the Oscars ceremony, which I hosted over at the Tivoli last night.
The place to see it.
Yeah, it was. Oh, we had a big crowd, doggone it. And I had so much stuff to give away.
Oh, I was just tickled by these people answering these trivia questions. Yeah. Just not blurting things out, not thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, must be how it feels to be a game show host, you know?
Yeah.
Like, reminded of the SNL sketches with Alex Trebek and Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yeah. What movie in 1978 won Best Actor, Best Actress? That was my favorite answer. Somebody said Grease. Yeah.
Yes.
They were a lively crowd.
That was cute. Yeah. And then the one woman who I said, what won Best Song from Mary Poppins? And this woman stood up to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, but I don't know what the hell she said.
Yeah, and she said it with such authority, too.
Yeah, I know. I was so cute, though. It wasn't even the right answer. Jim Chimerie was the right answer, but she was so cute, I just had to give her a prize. So that was a lot of fun. We'll talk more about the Oscars here in a few minutes. Let's run down the top 12 in the box office. Number 12 was A Dog's Purpose. Number 11 also has the word dog in the title, but it is a real dog. It is a Rock Dog, which is, I gave it a pretty lousy. I gave it 1.5 star.
Not even in the 10. My goodness.
And for a kid's movie, that's pretty sad that it can't even crack the top 10.
Yeah, in February, for gosh sakes.
But it deserves its scorn. It's really a lousy movie. And it's not doing very well because kids are smarter than I think we give them credit for. Number 9 was Split. Number 8 was La La Land, the big winner last night. Actually, nobody knows what won last night. That's the crazy thing. It may have been Hacksaw Ridge. Number 7 was Hidden Figures. Did that win anything last night?
No.
I don't think it did.
It got the longest applause for bringing out one of the real people.
Yeah, they brought out that old white woman in the wheelchair. I didn't understand that at all.
She's light.
Light skin.
Yes, okay. She's a mocha.
Okay. Number 6 was Fist Fight. Jim reviewed that last week.
Yeah.
Number 5, 50 Shades Darker, made $7.7 million. Number 4, The Great Wall. I think Great Wall's number 4 last weekend as well.
It was, I think, number 3 last
weekend. Was it? Okay. That made $8.7 million. John Wick 2, that's doing really well, I guess.
Yeah. It's got its following, I
guess. That's bizarre. I haven't even seen it. That made $9.0 million, which was good for third place at the box office. Number 2, Lego Batman Movie.
I thought that last week I was wrong. I thought that would be number 1 again for at least one more week. But
no, you were wrong.
It was
beat by the Get Out, the horror film that Jim reviewed. How many stars did you give Get Out?
I gave it 4. I could have probably gone a little higher, I'm
thinking.
There you go, And it made $30.5 million, dollars, which is outstanding, especially for a horror film, especially for a movie that couldn't have cost more than $10 million to make. $10 and some change.
But it was very clever.
Yeah, it was. And we'll be reviewing that here in a few minutes. What opens this weekend? Logan, I guess, opens this weekend.
Yeah,
that
Logan,
should probably be
table
number
19. Gosh, there's a... is there a kid's movie? Well, the movie you saw Saturday, right,
Oh,
Tom?
Yes, Before I Fall. That's not really a kid's movie, though.
Yeah, it's a pre-teen.
Okay. Yeah, well, so I'll talk about it here in a little bit. A young adult film.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk about all this stuff, these movies we got to review. Let's start with Get Out. It was number 1 at the box office over the weekend. It's a horror movie made by one of the dudes from the Peel and Eat guys.
Peel and Keel.
Peel and Keel.
Jordan
Peel.
Tall guy?
Nope.
No, it's the shorter guy.
Yes,
right. Okay.
Yes.
The tall guy's acts in more movies, I guess.
He does. He's everywhere.
Okay, so it's the short guy. Good for him.
So how long has this been going on, this thing? We hired Georgina and Walter to help care for my parents. When they died, I couldn't bear to let them go.
Yeah, I heard part of an interview with him last week, and he says he wants to. He's got in mind to do 4 more horror films.
Oh yeah, well, I'm sure they're going to give him all the money he wants.
Oh sure.
After this weekend, well,
yeah, this is surprising. Well, you know, this in this interview also, it was last week. He was bragging he was at 100% at Rotten Tomatoes, and I thought, well, it's, you know, 2 days before it opens. Wait till the other reviews come in.
Yeah,
it's still at 100%.
Yeah, and that's a little misleading though. That just means 100% of the critics gave it a positive review. It doesn't mean 100% of the critics gave it an A or an A plus. I mean, if it gets a B minus, that's still considered a positive review.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
That's still pretty.
But still, yeah, 100%. Yes. You don't see that too often.
Yeah. And I think it's well deserving here. It works on so many levels.
Oh yeah.
It is a good horror film. It's a satire. Well, people, you know, the trailers, except for showing his name, are kind of selling it as a horror film. But we'll tell you, it is very funny, and there's very funny moments.
And it's not just nervous laughter. It's genuine laughter. I mean, there's more genuine laughter than 90% of the so-called comedies that I actually have to sit through.
But, you know, although he's known for comedy, this is not overall a comedy. It really is within the horror genre.
Oh, sure.
Even though it has that, like many horror films.
But if you say it's a comedy, you're not wrong. If you say it's a horror film, you're not wrong. If you say it's a satire, you're not wrong. If you say it's a look at race relations, you're not wrong.
Oh, a lot of that.
It has a lot of that elements. I was really surprised in researching. This is his first thing he's directed. I thought maybe he directed some episodes of the TV show.
No.
But I think he and Key wrote most of them. And here's that's one of the undercurrents there. Their skits are funny, but they have a great social commentary. There's a famous sketch at the end about the slaves on the auction block, and it's a horrific thing, but the slaves are going, hey, why is he commanding more, you know, higher bids than me? What's the deal? So it's funny on different levels. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we want to single out some of the actors right away or go to the plot, but...
Yeah, we don't need to go to the plot too much.
I think you know, I think in my review I said, well, it's you know, guess who's coming to dinner, and the Stepford Wives, and meet the parents, it's all kind of meshed together. But I want to single out, we talked about the funny stuff, there is a movie-stealing performance by a stand-up comic guy, named Lil Rel Howery, as Rod, the TSA agent, the best buddy of Chris, the main guy in it. And he's hysterical, and I mentioned in my review, finally, Jordan should just get a pass going through airports from now on, because in most movies and TV shows, the TSA agents are an impediment. They're like lazy bullies. Mm-hmm. And here, this guy knows what's going on, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of a rebuttal to a lot of the horror film cliches that were obscured originally in Scream, if there's a big group of teenagers or young adults going into some dangerous area, who gets picked off first?
Yeah.
And here, the black people are being proactive, you know, which is great. And it was certainly a listing. This is one of the most vocal audiences I'd attended a movie with.
Yeah. Black audiences are going to love this movie. They're going to relate to it. We saw a trailer for something before it. What was it called? Like Girls Night Out or something like that, which is a movie with a black cast, and it just looks so awful and so condescending and so silly. I mean, there was more genuine laughs in this horror film than there were in the trailer for that stupid thing.
And it's so smart, this
movie. It's smart, it's clever. You know. And you might say the basic premise is that this interracial couple, he's black, she's white, they're going to meet her parents, and of course they live way out in the woods.
Oh, yes.
And the whole time he's talking to his buddy, the TSA agent, on phone as he's out here in the woods with these parents that turn out to be kind of strange.
Well, in most movies, the guy he's talking to on the phone says, oh, you're being paranoid and all that. And he's like, no, dude, something's going on.
Just the opposite.
And well, if he'd have met the servants, and here's another performance I want to single out, an actress named Betty Gabriel plays the housekeeper, Georgianne.
Oh, my
God. And that is one of the most disturbing, creepiest performances
I've seen. She is so scary.
It's sort of heartbreaking, too, what's going on with that character.
It is. It works on several levels, too. But her confrontations with the Chris character are just so... You don't know what's going to happen with her, and it's a terrific performance by her. I must say,
I agree.
Betty Gabriel is her name.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to the next movie. But we all recommend Get Out, a terrific, clever horror film.
I wouldn't surprised if it'll be on some of our top 10 lists. If it's not, then this will be a really... Yeah, it's early, but if it's not on a top 10 list, then, you know, it's going to be a really good year for movies.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly worth seeing. Everybody should see that.
Next movie, I think I'll give you guys a quick review of Collide.
Truck carrying golf balls. Packed with drugs. You steal truck. You bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
What kind of question is that?
Collide did not crack the top 12 in the box office. A little surprising because it opened pretty wide, and it is kind of the kind of movie that you would think people would want to go out and see because people like mindless car chase movies. But they didn't promote this movie at all.
I saw a few commercials for it. That's the only way I knew anything about it. Otherwise, I guess the actors aren't doing any press for
it. I guess. So. It's kind of weird. I think it was shot about 3 years ago. It actually stars Felicity Jones, who... got an Oscar nom, I guess, last year and or 2 years ago, and is starred in the Star Wars movie. So you'd think, you know, she's kind of a big deal, and she's playing this sort of damsel in distress movie in this car chase movie, Collide. It was shot really before she was a big star. And this movie, Collide, was called Autobahn in every country except the U.S. Autobahn is a much better title than Collide. And it takes place, a lot of it takes place on the Autobahn. The Autobahn is a federal highway in Germany, where there is no speed limit for much of it. And I remember when I was a kid, like the Autobahn, we'd talk about the Autobahn in sort of these hushed terms, like it was this really cool place.
I think where Collide would be a sequel to Crash.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, Crash Light. It's about... Nicholas Holt is the main star, and he plays an American who's living in Germany, but he works for this drug dealer played by Ben Kingsley, Oscar winner Ben Kingsley.
He's not doing Sexy Beast again, is he?
No, you know what he's doing, though, totally, is what was the character he played in one of the Iron Man movies?
Oh, the Mandarin.
Yeah. He's totally playing that character, but didn't the Mandarin sort of get busted as a ruse at some point?
He was an
but
actor.
Before that, remember when he was like had all these women all over him and all this jewelry and furs and all this stuff? He's playing that character. And actually, Ben Kingsley's having a good time. But anyway, back to the plot. He meets this other American, played by British Felicity Jones. She's a bartender there. And they fall in love. And she says, well, I can't be your girlfriend. I'm not going to move in unless you stop working for this drug dealer. So he quits working for the drug dealer and starts working at this junkyard. Well, anyway, she all of a sudden collapses. And she's got a bad liver. And she needs a liver transplant. He can't afford it because she's not, as an American, she's not covered. So he has to go back to work for Ben Kingsley to do one last heist. And they're going to steal a truck full of drugs from Ben Kingsley's rival drug dealer, played by fellow Oscar winner Anthony Hopkins. So you've got these two Oscar winners, these starring in this goofy drug car chase movie. But actually, this movie's a lot of fun. The car chase stuff is pretty spectacular. I think people who really like European sports cars are going to love this thing because he keeps stealing cars, but he keeps upgrading. At first, he's driving like a bug, and then he's driving like a Lamborghini by the end of the film. The car chases, like I say, are pretty spectacular. The stunt work, the car chase... specialist that they brought in for this movie do a spectacular job. Unfortunately, when they're not in the cars running around, the script is a little clunky. But you've got these two veterans, Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins. Kingsley's chewing the scenery. Anthony Hopkins is kind of playing a little more low key, and they work off each other well. They do have a scene together. These two actors have never been in a film together, Hopkins and Kingsley, and they do have a scene together in a diner. It's kind of like when De Niro and Pacino. Pacino had never been in a movie together, and they did their one scene in a diner. I think that might even be a spoof of that. It's pretty clever. It's a fun scene, and these two actors are having fun playing off each other. I have no complaints with this movie. It's not a movie that we're going to be talking about next Oscar season by any stretch. But the fact that it takes place in Germany is a different kind of a change of pace for a car chase movie. You see a lot of tourism in the countryside of Europe. Kind of reminded me a little bit of there was a car chase movie called Ronin with Robert De Niro that was one of John Frankenheimer's final films. Mm. It reminded me of that one a little bit.
It's better than that one with Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez.
That also took place in Europe, didn't it?
Yeah.
That was called...
Oh,
what the hell was that? It was called like Run or Chase or something almost as bad as Collide as far as bad titles go. But if you like car chase movies, you like mindless action movies, if you like Nicholas Holt and these Oscar winning actors and Felicity Jones, you can do a lot worse than Collide. Had I reviewed it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com, I would probably give it three out of five stars perhaps.
That sounds pretty generous.
It's not too bad. I don't know why they didn't put a little more money into the marketing, but they didn't. But it'll probably make plenty of money on the global market eventually. All right, let's move on. You guys both saw Logan.
We got ourselves an X-Men fan. Maybe a quarter of it happened. And not like this. In the real world, people die.
Logan.
I don't want to talk about it.
Logan.
Just stop.
Be careful.
Logan opens Friday, and that's Hugh Jackman playing Logan again. I didn't see it. Who's reviewing it?
I believe Michael is reviewing it for us, because he's the X-Men fan.
All right,
biggest one among us.
Go at it, guys. Is any good?
Well, you know, I guess I'll start if you don't mind, Kate. But I was surprised. This is the second Wolverine film that James Mangold has directed. He directed The Wolverine, and actually he directed Hugh Jackman in that Kate Leopold, that rom-com that he did with Meg Ryan years ago. I was surprised.
He also directed Copland with Sylvester Stallone.
Walk the Line. But this is definitely, I think, the best of the three Wolverine solo films. I think I would say it's maybe the third best X-Men film all general. This is not Marvel Studios. This is Fox, and they have a license for the X-Men characters. This is set about a dozen years in the future, and we're never shown it, but it appears that that Logan, Wolverine there, Hugh Jackman, and Professor Xavier are the last of the X-Men. Logan is kind of staying undercover, using his original name, James Howlett. He's a limo driver, but he's going back and forth to Mexico, where the ailing Professor X, Charles, is being tended to by a character named Caliban. And he's having some weird things going on with his psychic abilities. And Logan is failing, too. We see him taking out some thugs in the opening scene, but he's not as quick as he was. He's self-medicating. He's not healing as fast as he usually does. And he's having trouble with his claw extensions. And we later learn that the exoskeleton that he has, the adamantium skeleton, is poisoning him. And all of a sudden he gets contacted by this Mexican woman who's bringing around a little, she's maybe about 9 or 10 year old girl. And he wants, she knows about his powers, wants him to take care of her. There's a shadowy organization after them. And lots of mayhem ensues. It becomes a road trip between Wolverine and the young girl and Professor Xavier. And I should just caution, that if you're bringing your kids to all the other X-Men films, this is one you should definitely skip for the kiddies, because this is a hard R for violence.
Oh, yeah.
You get to
rated
see,
R?
It is rated R.
Is it more violent than Deadpool?
I think so. I think it's bloodier than Deadpool.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
which is saying a lot.
And it's very dark, Deadpool.
Very dark.
I'll go see it.
There's some humor in it. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is the little girl wants to go to a place she calls Eden, a haven for mutants.
Yeah, in North Dakota.
And she finds out about it via the X-Men comic books. And
they show that in the trailer.
Which is kind of an interesting sort of fourth wall device, which is kind of fun. But I can say it's a terrific film. I think it's definitely Hugh's best performance as Wolverine. And he and Patrick Stewart as Charles make a terrific team. They're very entertaining.
Anybody else in this film? Those two guys?
Well, Boyd Holbrook is the main bad guy. Mm-hmm. This young girl who's terrific in it reminds me a little bit of Chloe Moritz Grace in the Kick-Ass films. He is played by Daphne Keene. And Caliban is Stephen Merchant, who has another film opening on the same day. Your thoughts, Kate?
Well, it's very dark, and I thought it was very good, and it's a great way to kind of wrap up some of this stuff. And Wolverine is different in it, and
but does he die at the end?
Xavier is different in it.
Be a spoiler.
Well, we'll you know, you'll have to go see it to see how that exactly works out. But it's like jumps ahead in the future from the X-Men movies. So they give you some hints about what happened between now and then. But I think some viewers are going to be kind of a little dissatisfied that they don't know enough about what happened between now and then. That's kind of some of the comments I heard after the film, people talking about that.
Well, this gives them more stuff because they're going to keep doing X-Men movies.
Oh, yeah, well, so, yeah. But, you know, I just, as far as kind of wrapping up one character.
Is this the first R-rated X-Men movie?
I believe so.
It almost doesn't look like an X-Men movie. It almost doesn't look like a comic book movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of almost more like a dystopian horror film sort of thing.
And I should mention, when we saw it at the press screening, of course, we stayed at the end. We know the state of the end credits, and we did not get a bonus scene. But I heard via the internet that there is a bonus scene at the end.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I'll let you guys know next Monday, because I'll probably see it over the weekend.
Yes. So I think it's going to be huge. Okay. Get out of the first spot.
Jackman.
Yeah, it'll.
It's going to be huge, Jackman. Yeah. Okay, well, how many stars would you have given it, Jim?
I give it four.
Ooh,
least.
Jim, give it four. How many would you give it, Kate?
Probably 3.5.
All right, so Kate and Jim like Logan. Kate saw United Kingdom. She liked it.
I am told you no longer wish for me to honor my duty as your king because of the color of the wife I have chosen.
This could make your country ungovernable.
We have concluded you should be exiled for life.
I liked it for the most part. It's a terrific story. And this is one of those movies where you're compelled to say, based on a true story, lest readers scoff that such a thing could happen. So this is set in the late 1940s, and it's based on a real-life romance between a white English office worker and an African prince who's attending college in London.
So he should have gone to Queens like Eddie Murphy did in Coming to America and found his queen.
Nope. And this is a little different. So the African prince who's attending law school in London, he's due to return home shortly, very soon, to ascend as king of his country, which is Bushwanaland, which later became Botswana. Okay, so the two of them fall in love, whirlwind romance, and they marry. They know their families are going to object. His father is dead. The king's prince's father's dead, but his uncle is regent, and he knows he's not going to be happy with this. But what they don't expect is that there's an international and national crisis that follows their marriage. Now, remember, this is the late 1940s. It's an African king marrying a white woman and taking her back to be a white African queen.
Hmm.
Botswanaland is neighboring South Africa. South Africa is just starting to institute apartheid. So the idea of this biracial marriage ruling the neighboring country is pretty hot international stuff. And the director of this film has done historical costume dramas that touch on race before. She did Belle.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it.
Yeah. And she is herself British born, and her ancestor, her family came from Ghana. So, you know, this is a story that resonates with her. The prince, king, actually is played by David Oyelowo.
That's right.
Yeah. And the woman, Ruth Williams, is played by Rosamund Pike.
I like her.
Yeah. And they generate pretty good romantic chemistry to start, you know, at the beginning of the film, you know, when they meet and marry in London. Of course, they go back to what will become Botswanaland, and things are quite different there.
This is her first big movie since Gone Girl, I guess.
Right, and one of the few in which she really has a starring part. A lot of time you see her in supporting roles more often. She was in Gone Girl. She played a wonderful supporting role in Pride and Prejudice, the one with Keira Knightley.
And Education, too.
Right, and David Oyelowo, people probably would recognize him as he played Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, in Selma.
Yeah.
And a wonderful performance.
What was that, Hostage movie? Was it just called?
Yeah, he was in town.
It was just called Hostage or something.
I don't think it was Hostage, was it?
Something like that. It was a really bland title.
Yeah, it was not a very memorable film.
But he was down promoting that. Yeah, we got to meet him.
But the interesting Cool interesting. Guy. Yeah, he yeah. was a cool, cool guy. Interesting thing is that he himself was actually born a Nigerian prince.
Oh, yeah.
In London to Nigerian
parents.
But he's
not the one you get the emails from.
Right, right. He actually declined the title. But, you know, it gives him a little bit of a connection to this story. Actually, his his wife, who appears in the film, her name is Jessica, Jessica Oyelowo, and she's actually a white woman. I don't know if she's British or American. So interracial marriage speaks to him as well. So
life imitating art, man.
But he's a producer on this film, and he's doing a lot to promote it. It's a terrific story. The script or the screenplay is written by the guy who wrote the screenplay for Eye in the Sky last year. Wonderful thriller once again.
But well, why didn't you give it 5 stars?
I'll tell you. Okay. It's we have all these wonderful actors. We have this wonderful director. We have this wonderful writer doing the screenplay. Terrific story. But once the couple get back to Africa, the colonial forces find a way to separate them. And once they're separated, a lot of the drama, a lot of the energy goes out of the story. And it runs through the paces of events that happen to them, but you don't have the same kind of emotional energy once that he's in one place and she's in another. And it kind of, you know, I kind of thought maybe the problem was that the style of... the guy who did the screenplay, Guy Hibbard, and the director, Amana Asante. That their styles didn't work. You know, she does these lush, romantic sort of stuff, and Eye in the Sky is very direct, procedural, you know, fact after fact. And maybe they didn't mesh, but has wonderful performances by Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo in particular. And he gives a couple of really moving, touching speeches. So the film's still worth seeing. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's not quite as good as the story.
Yeah. Could have been better, in other words. Yeah. So Kate it's recommends A United Kingdom with reservations.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do a quick review of Before I Fall.
Been having deja vu all day long.
It's all high school things. Just a blip.
Watch out for the truck.
What truck?
I saw Before I Fall Saturday morning. Based on a young adult novel about a young woman played by Zoe Deutsch.
Yep.
Who I recognize from Everybody Wants Some. And she plays a gal named Sam, who's a senior in high school, and she's wealthy, and all her friends are really wealthy, and they're kind of mean girls. It's kind of a mean clique of girls, and they're bullies to sort of this other girl at school who's kind of a misfit, and they drive around in their cars, and they put on their makeup, and they talk about their boyfriends, and Sam is going to lose her virginity that night to her boyfriend, and I can't think of his name. But he's kind of a jerk, and he's kind of a sloppy drunk, and... they go to this party this evening where she's supposed to sleep with her boyfriend for the first time. And the misfit girl that they're always sort of cruel to, you can tell she's a misfit because she wears like a baggy sweater and she has her hair and her eyes kind of like Carrie White or something. She shows up at this party and everybody's really cruel to this poor girl. And so Sam and her four friends, after they've been cruel to this girl, they leave the party and they're driving off in their SUV and they hit something. And the car spins out and they all get killed. But not really, because the next morning, Sam wakes up again and it's the same day. It's just like Groundhog Day. Sam has to relive this day over and over again until she kind of finally gets it right. It's actually better than it sounds. I was a little surprised how much I like this movie. I sort of appreciated its seriousness and its sincerity. They're, for a teen movie about high school girls, there's not, you know, the scene where they're in the mall trying on clothes while music plays. It really sticks to the script. It's sort of lean. And it's all, but you know, some of the lessons are a little heavy-handed, a little obvious, like, you know, don't be a bully. Don't be a bully, or you might die and have to relive the same day over and over again until you figure out how to treat people a little bit better. But the acting is decent. I think teenagers are going to get caught up in all the drama of you know, teen angst and relationships between teenagers, and that's pretty good. The acting's pretty good. The Zoe Deutsch, I kind of enjoyed her. It's not going to end up on my top 10 list by any stretch, but I will be giving it a pretty positive review. What are we on the 5-star scale? I'll give it, I don't know, 3.5. Which is more than I expected to give it when I walked into this thing. I recommend Before I Fall. Any questions about Before I Fall?
No. Zoe Deutsch, last thing I saw her was Why Him, just a couple months ago. And Leah Thompson's daughter.
Yeah, that's right. She looks just like Leah Thompson.
Yeah.
So look for my review Thursday night over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. All right, what are we seeing this week? We're seeing something Thursday morning that we can't say what we're seeing.
Yes, but I hear it's a story as old as time.
Oh, yeah.
Song
as old as Rhyme.
And we're seeing Stephen Merchant's other big film that opens Friday, besides he's in Logan, is Caliban, and he is in a movie, a comedy called Table 19.
Which is from
the Duplass brothers.
Jay Duplass down at the Moonrise.
So, yeah, I wasn't aware that they were the directors until the update.
They're not the directors, they're the writers. Somebody else is directing.
Just the fact that they're involved makes it something to look forward to.
No, the director is Jeffrey Blitz, who did The Office and also the documentary Spellbound.
Okay.
The Office, the TV show?
No, the movie version.
I remember a movie of The Office.
Oh, not the British one?
Well, there is a new movie of the British Office. David Kent, wasn't that his character's
name?
David Brent. Well, he's got his own movie. Did you hear about that?
It's on Netflix, right?
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah.
All right.
Streaming.
Have you watched it?
No, I haven't yet. I thought it was coming out to theaters.
But it might be
playing select theaters. You never know. But so we're seeing that. Logan opens, and then the movie you just talked about with Leah Thompson's daughter opens. So it's got
And Table 19. All right. Well, we'll be back to review some of this other stuff next Monday. Let's see. A few local things going on. There's a documentary called The Dark Knight at Webster U, which is another movie about guns and a real-life mass shooting. Last week they showed a movie about the mass shooting over in Newtown, Connecticut. And then this weekend they're showing this Dark Knight, which is a documentary about the guy that shot up the movie theater where the Dark Knight movie was showing.
Dark Knight Rises.
Where was that? In Colorado or someplace?
Colorado.
So I don't know. We'll see. Go see Dark Knight if you want to see another documentary about a mass shooting. The Devil Bat is playing at Schlafly Thursday night. This is this ridiculous A film series which has decided to only show public domain movies because they're tired of losing money on licensing fees. I won't have anything to do with it. Devil Bat is not a particularly good movie. It stars Bela Lugosi. It was made in the 30s. It's in the public domain for a reason, and I wish they were showing something else. Moving on, they're showing Night of the Comet. Wednesday night at Schlafly,
a much better film,
and that and we talked about that about a year ago because Andy showed it at the Late Night Grindhouse. It's got those pretty young actresses,
Catherine Mary Stewart, and I've just forgotten her blonde sister in it. But
It's a fun movie. I'm kind of glad because I didn't stay when it played at midnight a year ago. So I'm going to probably go check it out Wednesday night over at Schlafly Bottleworks at 8 o'clock. That's part of their Strange Brew film series. And
it's very entertaining.
Yes. And then my 16mm night is 1 week from tomorrow night. That'll be March 7th over at the Way Out Club starting at 8 o'clock. I will be showing Arthur, starring Dudley Moore, is the lovable drunk. And at 10 o'clock I will be showing Chato's Land, starring Charles Bronson.
As a lovable Indian on the run, right?
That's right. The lovable drunk Indian. So that's a lot of fun, and that's at the Way Out Club, 2525 Jefferson, at the corner of Jefferson and Graboy. That is free, although we do set out a jar for the National Children's Cancer Society. I think that's it for local stuff. Any other local stuff you guys can think of?
Oh, I can't think of anything offhand.
All right. We talked a little bit about Q-Fest. We'll talk about that more, and we got French Fest. That's coming up. There's always fun stuff going on in St. Louis. We lost an actor. Bill Paxton. I didn't know Bill Paxton was going to die. Good grief. I like Bill Paxton. He was 61. Only 61.
Yeah.
Jim, why don't you talk a little bit about old Mr. Paxton?
Okay. He's been a mainstay in movies. Actually, he's been in films for over 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually started out in the Roger Corman group there in the art department, as far as I understand, toiled away in there. Actually, I looked up his first screen credit is for Crazy Mama with Cloris Leachman.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he sort of became sort of James Cameron's version of Hector Elizondo to Gary Marshall. Even though Paxton's not in all of the Cameron films, he's in a good chunk of them, and he's memorable in a lot of them.
Or like Dick Miller to Joe Dante or something.
But I was thinking back. He worked with Cameron. He did gave a memorable performance in Cameron's then-wife's film, Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark. That might be my favorite of Paxton's performances. He's one of the wild sort of redneck vampires in that, and he's the craziest of the bunch. And I think at one point he opens up a vein on somebody, and he takes a big drink and says, "Finger looking good."
And he's on he's on the poster for the film.
He's the main terrific marketing tool. Somebody online was saying he's the only actor to have been killed by an alien, a predator, and a Terminator. So there you go. Mm-hmm.
And he directed a film called Frailty, which I saw at the theater. It was Matthew McConaughey. That was a pretty good film. I don't think he directed again, or maybe he directed one other film. I'm surprised he didn't enjoy directing. I don't know. Maybe he kept too busy acting.
Done a lot of work in television, and I had forgotten that he's in a current TV show right now. He's in the TV adaptation of the Oscar-winning film Training Day in sort of the Denzel Washington
role.
So that's kind of unusual.
Well, I have a favorite Bill Paxton performance. I liked his performance in Tombstone.
Once again,
he gets to die, but he does it in spectacular fashion.
He's one of the Earps in it, right?
Yes, he is.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody's great in Tombstone, But he's really funny in True Lies. And, of course, everyone was quoting his line from Aliens,
And Weird Science. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah. Titanic, of course. That was in one of the commercials during the Oscars last night. Terrific. He ran a leading man in a couple of films like Twister, and he was one of the astronauts in Apollo 13, of course. Mm-hmm. But, wonderful guy.
All right, so RIP to Mr. Bill Paxton, and he was only 61. Didn't see that one coming, doggone it. And also, Judge Wapner died, who was not in any movies, but Dustin Hoffman made several references to him in Rain Man. I used to love Wapner. I used to record at the People's Court every day, and I would come home from work and I would watch the People's Court. But he was 97. He lived a long, long life. All right, so RIP to Judge Wapner and Bill Paxton.
Simple Plan is another one of his great movies.
Right.
Simple Plan.
All right, good. Bill Paxton was not in the In Memoriam last night because I guess they had that all worked out. But I think who introduced the
Jennifer
In Memoriam? Oh, yeah. And she did, I think, mention him just before they started the thing. And Robert Vaughn wasn't in In Memoriam either. Now, he was nominated for an Oscar, so there's no reason to leave out Robert Vaughn.
Yeah,
good grief.
Usually one or two. I guess, Bowie died early last year, so they probably had him in
there. Yeah, and Alan Rickman, I think, was in there last year.
Yeah.
But there's always three or four that are like, what?
Yeah. So we did watch the Oscars last night. I watched them over the Tivoli. It was a fun time.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a pretty lively Oscars.
I thought it was a pretty good Oscars, too. Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel did a swell job of it.
He was funny.
Good lines. Yeah. They played up his whole rivalry with Matt Damon. One of the best payoffs of the night. They had a reoccurring thing where the current or more modern actors would be in a dark screen room talking about a favorite film of theirs and a favorite actor. They started that out with Charlize Theron and The Apartment with Shirley MacLaine. Then they came back with Javier Bardem and Meryl Streep and Bridges of Madison County. And then he had Jimmy Kimmel watching Matt Damon and We Bought a Zoo. I'm like, that's fantastic. Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Hilarious.
And then Matt Damon goes, "I like my work in that film."
when he came out to introduce I guess it was the writing category, I guess.
Screenplay.
And the orchestra started playing Matt on as he was introducing it.
They playing him off. He said, "You're playing me off."
Yeah, with Jimmy Kimmel for music, the orchestra, of course. But that was one of the funnier reoccurring bits during it. But I thought there were a few surprises. I think there's a big jaw-dropping moment at the end of the Oscars. But as far as the winners go, Suicide Squad getting makeup?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Star Trek? That was
didn't expect that at all.
Yeah. Smear a lot of lipstick on somebody, I guess that's considered a makeup effect. So I don't know.
Well, there was more to it than that.
But
it's not as
There were no real big surprises.
I think we mentioned last week. I thought that Hacksaw would take a couple of technical awards.
Yeah, and it took editing, which is a big award,
but
and it deserved it.
Its best win was, I think, for sound editing. because one of the sound editors is that this was his 21st nomination without a win. So went to the party and got to take home his date or whatever, or take home a trophy from it.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah.
I was
disappointed that there were no wins for Hell or High Water. I thought was a heck of a
film. But on balance, they spread him around pretty well. And Mel really made Mel the center of attention. There was a lot of the reaction shots of Mel, which is good. And Mel seemed to be having a good time.
He seemed to be having a great time.
Good humor. And his date was certainly pretty.
Yeah, his new wife.
Is that his wife?
I thought he just had a kid recently.
I thought it was his daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had like 10 kids with his first wife.
Yeah, I think Viggo Mortensen was sitting with his son. And I think he's Is that who that was?
I thought that guy was kind of creepy.
I don't know who that was.
And then,
Emma Stone brought her brother. I thought that was a good idea.
Apparently, Ryan Gosling brought his sister, who was kind of busting out of her dress.
She was. Speaking
in a good way.
Costumes there. They even threw an award to the Fantastic Beasts movie.
I think it won two. Yeah, I think it won.
And I was surprised at that, too.
Yeah. And then, I knew that La La Land would get quite a few there. It ended up getting 6 all total.
Out of 14, which isn't.
I think we mentioned at the end of it last night. You would have liked to have seen Hell or High Water get more. I would have liked to have seen.
Like to get something.
Have gotten more nominations, Ruth Negga being in there in the mix was good. I thought the acceptance speeches were pretty good. I like how they did some of the musical numbers. I like that the young woman I mentioned, the young woman from Moana, she took a smack from one of the chorus people. They had these poles that were supposed to be waves of water,
right?
And smacked and just kept going on.
They hit her in the back of the head.
In the back of the head.
You can see her hair flying up.
Yeah. But by gosh, she didn't miss a beat.
Good for her. She's a professional. I mean, it's a little tricky for me is hosting this with 150 people because I can't pay as much attention. I got to kind of look at my notes and my next trivia questions, and people are always wanting to talk to me and stuff. So I really need to watch my recorded.
Kate, you saw the foreign language Oscar winner. Were you pleased with that choice?
I was surprised at some of the things that weren't nominated, but the winner was The Salesman, which is an Iranian film, and it's a terrific drama by a wonderful director. He won previously for A Separation, which, he has focuses on modern couples in Tehran and kind of uses their personal drama to explore the challenges of living in modern Iran, as far as the restrictions and the cultural things. And, he's kind of a criticism of his government. But this is a terrific film that's kind of a thriller element in which this man's wife is attacked in their new apartment they just moved into. Mm-hmm. Apparently there's a misunderstanding having to do with who lived in the apartment beforehand. But the salesman is not the person who attacked the wife. The salesman refers to Death of a Salesman, which is the character he is playing in the play the two of them are in. He and his wife are both actors, and they're preparing a production.
What
won
Best Documentary?
Oh, that was the it premiered really on ESPN. OJ Made America. Like I say, we mentioned a few weeks ago there are a lot of documentaries we would like to have seen in there. Yeah. One of the things that brightened my heart as it did you, Kate, was Casey Affleck's win for Best Actor, because there had been a lot of controversy swirling around his sexual harassment suit from seven years ago. So I'm glad they went through the legal process on that, so that should be in the past.
I was kind of surprised to find that he almost seemed unprepared to win. He didn't seem to have notes or a speech prepared like he didn't expect to
win. He didn't shave.
Well, I don't know. He's been doing that for a while.
Denzel was kind of surprised, I think, after getting his, he got the SAG Award, I think, or something like that. He really thought he was going to be picking it up. But
he got a lot of attention during the awards. People referred to him.
He's much loved there.
A lot of love from the other performers getting awards.
His co-star, of course, was up there singing his praises, and awfully happy to see Mahershala Ali up there too. That was wonderful. But we want to talk about the finale.
I guess. Is there anything else we want to talk about? I guess the finale. I think a lot of people may have gone to bed thinking. La La Land 1.
Yeah, I was somebody, you know, one of my buddies says, yeah, I turned it off when I saw La La Land 1 Best Picture. What happened after that? Yeah. But, yeah, I could kind of, when it was happening, when the La La Land people were up there accepting, I saw a couple of the crew people scurrying behind them. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, why are they out there? They shouldn't be out there. And there was a lot of rushing back and forth in the backdrop. Mm-hmm. And it turned out about, you know, this big, you know, whoopsie that happened back yeah. there. And I immediately thought of, well, this sort of disputes and can kind of put to rest the story about Marissa Tomei winning Best Supporting Actor many years ago for My Cousin Vinny, because a lot of people were spreading this rumor. I saw even Rex Reed on TV repeating the story that Jack Palance was giving out that award and just read the first nominee.
That was debunked pretty quickly, then.
Yeah, well, this really proves it, because, you know, immediately the Pricewaterhouse people said, if anyone says the wrong name, we will come out correct.
Well, it wasn't
that.
Immediately, though. They got it through two or three or four speeches by these La La Land guys before they came out there.
But yeah, it did happen, though. They did.
Oh, they did eventually. Sure.
And I wish I'd remember this, the producer's name, and he was one of the Justins from La La Land. He says, I'm very proud to give the Best Picture Oscar.
Yeah, he was a good sport about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
what else could he do? What else could he do, though? Stomp his feet and throw a tantrum?
He could have said nothing, but I thought Kimmel had a great comeback blaming it on himself, but it's not his fault. Certainly no one's
It's no one's fault it. Except to, well, it's well, the Pricewaterhouse people.
And hopefully nobody's going to blame Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, who were the announcers, because Warren Beatty kind of paused before he read that. We thought we were playing around and stuff.
Yeah,
but he was, you know, confused with what he was reading. And then
people are
going to
blame. Yeah, of course they're going to blame Warren. And,
yeah. Well, someone wasn't a matter of he couldn't read.
I saw people on online blaming racism. This one. No, I'm serious. Oh, they wanted to take away Moonlight's big moment in the sun, and they did. And this was a racist conspiracy. Well, I read that too.
Yeah, I'm wondering though if expanding the from five nominees to nine might have taken it away from La La Land, because that split up the vote more and was probably got
silly.
It very very close between Moonlight and there, and Moonlight just happened to get a couple more. It's a good film, but I thought everyone was really surprised because it's La La Land. It seemed to have a momentum at that point. You know?
It did, but you know, then again, it is a musical, and it's light and bright, and dramas kind of almost always, they have a little edge.
And there has been a little backlash in the last few weeks. Talking about reading the wrong winner or whatever, there was someone online saying that they think that actually happened with Sir Laurence Olivier and Amadeus. Have you heard this story before?
No.
That Sir Laurence Olivier did just read the first alphabetical, you know, nominee there, and it just happened to be Amadeus. Luckily, or they would have stopped it. But but someone was also online saying that supposedly that people thought that happened with Crash winning over Brokeback Mountain. I never heard that before, and certainly that would have put a stop to that. That's for certain. Yeah.
Well, but I think we know now that they will put a stop to it, because, like you said, people were getting up and making acceptance speeches when they came and announced, "No, Moonlight wins Best Picture."
And yeah, I love the shots of the crowd, the audience going, "What?"
but we don't really know who won. I think it's still kind of unclear. I think it may have been Hacksaw Ridge.
Well, like I say, it can put on its next DVD release. It is a two Oscar winner. It won as many as Manchester by the Sea. Awfully happy to see Kenneth Lonergan up there.
Oh yeah,
for it. Yeah, for that screenplay, a terrific screenplay. So I'm glad it got a couple of Oscars there. And I say it won. One more than Fences. So.
Right. I wish it won a few more. That was one of my favorites of the year. But
what? Oh, what's
Manchester?
That?
Yeah, Manchester by the Sea.
What? It just won two, writing and acting. And those are the two I think everybody thought it was going to win.
Yeah. But of course, I can say Viola Davis, she was the sure thing. And I think she had probably more dialogue than the other four nominees put together.
Mm-hmm. She also had the most blubberiest speech I've heard.
The
in
most
her
emotional
decades.
Speech by far.
I saw that. Have you seen the video there from the Seth Meyers show, the Oscar bait movie? Watch that. Summarizes all the stuff that it's an Oscar. If you get a chance to look at that, that's terrific.
Right. Well, the Oscars is always fun, and we'll be back next year
to talk about our Oscar. We're going to have to wrap this episode of the Weird Movie Geeks podcast up. Next week, we'll be back, and we can review, the Table 17 or...
Table 19.
I was off by two tables. And we'll review some other things. I don't think
we can review that other film we're seeing this week. So.
Right. We'll find something to talk about. Yeah. Doggone it. We always do, but we're going to have to wrap up. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather,
ta-ta-ta.
Black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, Don. Hey.
Black leather, rock, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash. Black leather, crash. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward into battle, dear chaps.
You happy in your work, Johnny?
By the lift!